Good morning, AWS, and welcome to the AWS Morning Brief. I am cloud economist Corey Quinn, fixing AWS bills here in San Francisco or wherever I happen to find them. Today is July 1st. Welcome to the third quarter for most of you. This episode is sponsored by Influx Data, the creator of InfluxDB. InfluxDB is like Amazon TimeStream, except that it has customers. In addition to being actually available for sale, it's also the de facto time series database you probably use if you need a time series database. More about them a bit later, or if you're impatient and want to know more right now, visit influxdata.com. I'm going to be in New York next week for the AWS Summit, but also to bother people. If you're in New York City and want to catch up or hear me rant about some technology or other to folks that are in your office, let me know. I'm always up to sit down with people to talk about interesting AWS environments, as well as to pass out Billy the Platypus stickers, pins, and drink umbrellas. Last week was the inaugural Reinforce, AWS's security conference. I gave a session which went well and was also mentioned in the keynote by Amazon's Chief Information Security Officer, Steve Schmidt. And the fact that that happened is just still kind of unreal to me. Someone probably got fired for letting that slip into the final version of the deck, but I'm grateful to him just the same. Next year's Reinforce will be held in Houston, Texas, and is expected to have many more attendees, because everything in Texas is bigger, louder, and more obnoxious. Speaking of loud and obnoxious, the video of my session is now available online on AWS's YouTube channel. So there were a lot of announcements that came out of Reinforce. A dispatch from the front lines of the cloud wars is a good place to start. General availability has captured Control Tower, Service Quotas, and Security Hub. Let's go through those in order. Control Tower was announced at reInvent last year. And that's a wrapper around Landing Zone, which is a way of automatically building out various AWS accounts within an organization in a programmatic, controlled, and repeatable way. The problem with Landing Zone is it required a fair bit of maintenance and handholding, whereas Control Tower mostly automates an awful lot of that away. It's worth looking into if you're trying to manage accounts sensibly at scale in an organization. Service Quotas is a new service that launched, and in its early Generation 1 version that we're seeing now, it seems a little, well, let's call it limited, or to be a bit more fair to it, it seems like it's a bit behind what it could be. By which I mean, it winds up listing out every quota, or by which is a new term that they're using to describe service limits that we've always been using for the last 13, 14 years. Nope, now they're called quotas in this context. Why? Couldn't tell you. But what this does is it lists all the service limits inside of your account, at least the public ones and some of the ones that you are able to get adjusted and support knows about. It doesn't list the ones you could get addressed, but support swears up and down don't really exist. There's a bit of inconsistency, and that's kind of the problem right now with limits, or at least it has been historically. With service quotas, you get a dashboard on a per-region basis of all the different services that you're using and the limits that you can adjust inside of that service. This, in turn, winds up giving you the opportunity to automatically open tickets for those limit increases. I've tried that, and it's going pretty well. The problem that I have is in calling it a quota in the first place, because if you tell me I have a disk quota on a big file server, for example, I interpret that to mean that I will be able to use things up to that quota, and then it's going to stop me. In the context of AWS, these are service limits in that when they're exhausted, it's done on an account-wide basis. So my terrible application, or me as a terrible developer, is not going to be able to stop at a certain boundary of limits. It's going to continue to be account-wide. I would have called this Service Limit Manager. And because it's AWS, they would have probably called it Systems Manager, Service Limit Manager, because why use one word when eight will do? But that's a bit of a naming, I guess, nitpicking. All in all, I like it. I think that it's going to be opportune for future expansion. And what it also does right now that's kind of neat is it gives the opportunity to take service limits and request that template-wise to other accounts as you spin them up. This is great. So if you're trying to spin up a second account to do a exact clone of what you've already got, you don't have to go through the problem of smacking into the exact same service limits again. At least that's my understanding from a 5-minute read of it. More to come in the coming weeks, I'm sure, as soon as people hear this and correct me loudly with a bat. The last thing that went generally available was Security Hub. This acts as a central point to gather a bunch of different security tooling and alerts throughout your account. Now, a lot of security purists will say, oh, we don't need that. We already can build this with our own tools ourselves. Great. Maybe it's not for you. For the rest of us here on planet Earth, we wind up wanting to care a lot more about what it is that we're seeing in a security context, what it is that we're building out, and what it is that's causing things to start screaming in the night. Translating all of that data into useful signal is valuable, and that's what Security Hub does. Again, this was announced last year at reInvent, but it's nice to see it coming into the world now. In slightly more mundane news, Amazon AppStream has added support for Windows Server 2016 and 2019. Okay, that sounds useful, I suppose, but by and large, it's probably not going to be particularly transformative for most folks, given that I don't see a whole lot of AppStream users when I'm talking to folks in the wild. If that's you and you are using AppStream, please let me know. I'd like to hear more about your use case because I don't think I fully understand it. Amazon CloudWatch Events now supports Amazon CloudWatch logs as a target, and it also supports tagging a CloudWatch Events rules, but I think this is awesome because, hooray, a CloudWatch component now supports another CloudWatch component. It's impossible for me to read this as anything other than two quarreling team members have resolved their differences, so I just want to congratulate the two of them on burying the hatchet and getting back to a constructive working relationship. Amazon Connect has launched a contact flow versioning system, which is a very elegant rephrasing of, we installed an undo button. It solves a useful problem where you're building something out, you change something, and then realize you didn't want to do that. Reverting it is hard to do in a console, and to be very blunt, the API support for Amazon Connect, not terrific. Not yet, anyway. DynamoDB Transactions now supports up to 25 unique items and 4 megabytes of data per transactional request. That's getting into the realm of me being able to misuse it as a different kind of terrible database than the kind of terrible database it was designed as originally. This is not, incidentally, a criticism of the database itself, but more so my ability to subvert any database into behaving terribly because I'm lucky like that. Speaking of different kinds of databases, InfluxDB is obviously the time series database that everyone thinks about when it comes to Influx Data's products, but they've got a lot more to offer than that. They've got Telegraph for metrics collection out of systems, Chronograph for visualization, and Capacitor for real-time streaming. And yes, all those tools are provider agnostic, but they can all be run on AWS because that's where everyone's production workloads live. What's more is that these things are offered by Influx Data, both as open source solutions as well as hosted SaaS offerings. Check them out at influxdata.com and see if you might have a problem that would benefit from a sudden influx of Influx. My thanks to Influx Data for sponsoring this issue of the AWS Morning Brief. There have been a couple of changes to Amazon's FSx for Windows file server. In other words, EFS only for Windows. It can now use a single managed Active Directory with file systems across VPCs or accounts. And you can also use it with your organization's self-managed Active Directory, which, okay, awesome. I don't know how big of a deal that is, to be very honest with you, other than the fact that first, going cross-account or cross-VPC sounds handy, but the fact that you only now are able to use it with an organization's self-managed AD, were you forced to be using the one built into AWS originally? Because that doesn't sound great. It seems that you're going to have a whole bunch of root of trust issues if you're going down that path. Again, this is not my area. I could be way off base on this. If so, and I'm wrong, hit me up on Twitter at QuinnyPig. That's QUINNY Pig. Amazon Neptune is now available in Europe, as opposed to Neptune's original position of just beyond the orbit of Uranus. Yes, that's an astronomy joke. Amazon Workspaces now supports copying images across AWS regions, which is super handy. It's nice to be able to take something that you're working on the East Coast, take an image, and then have the exact same thing on the West Coast or in a different country. Again, turns out multiple countries have both an East and West Coast. That is today's geography lesson without having to go to war, Americans. You're welcome. They also announced a new feature called VPC Traffic Mirroring for Amazon EC2 instances. And what that means is you can now look at a VPC and replicate traffic from instances, from load balancers, from ENAs, I believe, and have that spit out somewhere else as a network monitoring tap. There are a bunch of tools that will consume this. You can view it almost in the same way that you would a TCP dump from somewhere else. If you're from the networking world, think of this as a span port. People have been asking for this for years and years, and now that we've all found ways to work around the lack, it exists. I will point out you're probably going to need some third-party stuff to make any sense of this, because understanding a packet dump without advanced tooling is like straining raw sewage with your teeth. AWS Backup is now available in 6 additional regions, because you can never have too many backups in too many places. That's always good. AWS Glue is now available in Stockholm, which is awesome and coincides with the unexpected and sudden deprecation of the Stockholm region's AWS Horse. Also in the world of expansions, IoT Greengrass is now available in 7 additional AWS regions, which means that Greengrass can be greenfielded lots of places. AWS Marketplace now integrates with your on-site procurement systems, which is awesome because that is the primary reason the AWS Marketplace exists in the first place. When you're selling something to big companies, you need to go through a vendor management process. If a company such as, I don't know, AWS has already done that for you and you can sell something through them, you have bypassed approximately 18 months of work in some cases. Some of those contracts things are absolutely ponderous. This is big for people who sell to large enterprises. What about people who don't sell to large enterprises? Well, we call them happy. On the opposite side of large enterprises, File Gateway now adds encryption and signing options for SMB clients, which is handy when you don't want to have to go down an entire enterprise-grade system just in order to go ahead and build out simple things like encryption and validation. Amazon EC2 Instance Connect has launched, which allows you to SSH into an instance using native SSH. It's very similar to Systems Manager Session Manager without the ridiculous name, but the additional value here is you don't have to run an agent in the same way on these instances that's scoped to do all kinds of things. You can be much more granular, it has very time-bound permissions, and you don't have to explain that entire process to compliance groups. It is strictly SSH. For most of what we're doing on instances, that should be enough. And if we're talking best practice whiteboard architecture here, it should be relatively infrequent. In an ideal world, you're not remoting into instances very often. And when you do, it's usually for a last-minute emergency or some kind of diagnosis. There are new instance sizes for EC2 instances, namely the M5 and the R5 instances, which is great because when Goldilocks got to the 194th bed, it was great. Except just a smidgen too lumpy on the left side. And if there's a pillow available that's another 3/4 inch thicker, yeah, someone in the EC2 group with all these instance types coming out would benefit from a close encounter with a bear whose patience has finally worn too thin. The network load balancer now supports UDP. And the default snarky answer is what? So now I can load balance DNS? Yes, if you say that, you're incredibly sarcastic and also have somewhat limited imagination. This is huge because UDP is used across the board for a lot of applications, from streaming media to mobile shell, which is an SSH replacement, to NTP, anything VoIP. This feels like it's sort of the last brick to fall into place for a lot of folks who are clinging to the ELB classic load balancers, and now they can finally migrate off. I'm glad to see this. I'm looking forward to seeing what people make out of this. There's a new digital training course available from AWS on data analytics fundamentals, which sucks the fun out of data analytics. Not that there was much there to begin with, because it turns out it's all about data normalization. Welcome to Microsoft Excel, computer science students. You'll have fun here. The AWS Security blog did a profile of Mark Ryland, who's a director at the Office of the Chief Information Security Officer, at AWS. And surprisingly, this interview is with someone who works in security, but is the answers aren't just a bunch of answers of that consist of variations on a theme of, sorry, I can't tell you that. Personally, I would suck at working in PR at Amazon or in security, because if you've ever listened to me, you already know I have a comment for everything. And lastly, AWS has released the AWS Security Incidents Response White Paper. This is a reasonably well-crafted dive into how other, lesser companies might consider responding to security incidents. AWS themselves has no security incidents to report at this time or any other time. The white paper is suspiciously good for folks who have not had to go through this themselves by all evidence from outside, but ignore my snark on this. Go and take a look at that white paper. It's really well done, and it'll help you craft reasonable incident response policies in a time of cloud. That's all that happened this past week. As mentioned, I'll be in New York next week. I am Corey Quinn, cloud economist at the Duckbill Group. My thanks to Influx Data for sponsoring this episode, and I'll talk to you next week.
This has been a Humble Pod production. Stay humble.